Hello, this is Talking Europe. It was one of those moments where everybody knew somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody. On the night of Friday the 13th of November 2015, France's worst peacetime massacre occurred when suicide bombers struck a concert hall, a stadium, bars and restaurants, murdering 130 people and injuring hundreds. One of my colleagues was killed. Mathieu Hoche worked in our TV gallery just a few meters from where I'm sitting now. The same year, France was traumatized by the Charlie Hebdo attacks. And of course, many, many terrorist atrocities have happened since then. 58 attacks were reported by 14 EU member states in 2024, according to Europol. Coordination between EU members is key, and that's really the role of my guest today. Bartjan Vechter is the EU counterterrorism coordinator. He's been in this job since March 2024. He's a senior Dutch diplomat and worked in top roles at the Netherlands mission to the UN and to its delegation to NATO. He joins me from Brussels. Bartjan Vechter, thank you so much for being my guest. A lot of people are still struggling with the trauma. They couldn't go back to work and so on. What are your thoughts on this 10th anniversary?
Thank you, and thank you for having me here. Indeed, you framed it correctly. I mean, these events were traumatic in the first place for France, but also for the rest of Europe, I think, had a huge impact on our society. Of course, my thoughts are with the victims in the first place, victims who are still suffering, some who survived, family members, of course. And my thoughts are always with them in the aftermath of any terrorist attack, because, as you rightly said, the terrorist attacks have continued, although in a different form, over the years. So we're not free of terrorism or the terrorist threat. It's still there. I think what is important is that the attacks that took place 10 years ago have really been a game changer, if you will, as far as cooperation at the EU level is concerned. I think it really triggered a lot of efforts at EU level among member states.
Yeah, let's talk a bit about those efforts. Of course, national security remains the responsibility of member states. And one of the big challenges that you still have 10 years later is that there's no genuine shared intelligence mechanism. Is that hampering you in understanding what's really going on?
As you rightly say, this touches the core of national security, meaning the core of member states' competence, and that's the way it should be, because it's a part of national responsibility to protect citizens in the first place. That being said, there's a lot that can be done and it has to be done and that is being done at European level when it comes to information sharing. The EU has no role when it comes to intelligence collection or sharing. That's really up to member states. So it's each and every member state for itself that decides what to share with whom and at what instance and in what quantity. What we do at European level, we use the intelligence that is being shared by member states through the mechanisms that have been set up at EU level. And we build on those. Also, I do the same in my work in engaging with third countries, with partner countries, and of course, in engaging with member states themselves.
Another issue that you've highlighted, which is still a kind of obstacle, perhaps 10 years after those attacks, is access to data. And of course, that is also a question for member states, isn't it, who like to guard this privacy as a kind of national preserve. So again, I think you've said your investigators are being sometimes quite seriously undermined in their quest for data. Is that correct?
So my role is really to address any gaps in our response to counterterrorism. And if we see now, and that's what I'm being told by law enforcement throughout the EU, that investigations are becoming more and more difficult. Why? Because they involve digital data, which are often encrypted. Then we have a problem because, of course, privacy is critical and we should be happy that many of our communications nowadays through digital platforms are in fact encrypted. It protects citizens, it protects our privacy, and it protects us also from cyber attacks. That being said, we also have a responsibility in protecting the security of our citizens from terrorists, from people who abuse these same systems to communicate amongst each other. It's really a continuation of the kind of power powers that a law enforcement in the EU and elsewhere have always had for many decades, if not more, to investigate in individual cases and to access, for instance, you know, open letters, open suspect packages, enter a house when suspects are there or are suspected of being there. That's a normal part of investigations. And since everything nowadays, or most of our investigations now, involve digital data, I think it's about 85% of investigations nowadays that involve digital data, it's critical that our law enforcement also has the ability, again, in individual cases and always, of course, within the boundaries and of the law, with law or legal warrants, to access those data.
Obviously, this whole threat has evolved very much. And Europol says that almost one in three suspects arrested for terrorism-related offences in 2024 was a minor or a young adult. So this highlights the whole issue of online communities, doesn't it?
It does. And indeed, for all the benefits that the online environment has brought us, I think we're seeing increasingly worrisome developments, not only of the spread of worrisome content or terrorist content, but also borderline content and similar kind of content that incites hatred, incites violence. We're seeing ultra-violence online. And we see that young people are very vulnerable, can be targeted by deliberately by terrorist groups who exploit this kind of content. There's propaganda very targeted, being driven by Daesh, which has become very agile over the years in doing this. And I've called it before in your emission. I've called it mutant jihadism. Just to say that, you know, we see that the threat is changing and continues to target vulnerable groups in our society. First and foremost, our young children. And that's a problem because, like you rightly say, we have seen many instances, increasingly so, of young people as young as 12 years old, even younger in some cases, who have resorted to committing or trying to commit terrorist attacks, and that's a big problem.
Yeah, and this is also linked to another thing that's happened since we last spoke in our last program, Bartian Vector, which is the advances of artificial intelligence and deep fakes, which of course sort of amplify the whole manipulation and brainwashing that's happening. Do you have any tools specifically to deal with that?
Well, these are highly technological developments. And again, these also bring a lot of benefits. But we need the tech industry to also recognize that these technological developments always pose challenges as well. And it's those that we need to address together. So we can regulate at EU level or national levels some of these new developments. But in the end, it's a matter of adapting our law enforcement, our rule of law, if you will, to these new technological developments, making sure that they are incorporated in the systems that we have put in place. Why? The bottom line is always to ensure the security of our citizens and to protect them and to protect our young people. So AI is a development that offers many opportunities, but it's important that we bring the tech industry together, and we have platforms that we have put in place at EU level. We have the EU Internet Forum, for one, where we dialogue with industry about these issues, because it's something that very often we have together to find the correct answers to how to deal with them.
You mentioned Daesh, or ISIS as it's known in English more commonly. What do you think the threat is today? Because, of course, the ISIS caliphate, the so-called caliphate, actually did fall in 2019, but we've had major changes since then in Syria and, of course, the war in Gaza. What risks do you see now?
Well, jihadism continues to be the major threat, the number one threat in Europe today in terms of terrorist threat. What Daesh has been very agile at has been to adjust its strategy once after the so-called caliphate had been defeated. To adjust its strategy, what it has done, it has decentralized its command structure and focused on different regions, not only in the Middle East, but also in Africa, parts of Africa, West Africa, East Africa, South Asia, Central Asia, and presented these regions as the new front lines in the jihadist fight. And what it has done separately is to focus very much on the online environment as the avenue to recruit individuals within the EU. In fact, we haven't seen the sort of large-scale concerted attacks that we had seen 10 years ago in Paris, that to a large extent is to the credit of our law enforcement, our services, and who have been very effective in their response. But at the same time, we see that the shift of strategy by groups like Daesh has been very much to realize that it's much more effective to focus on individuals who commit attacks from within the EU rather than to organize attacks from outside the EU. And that's a worrisome development.
Just leading on from that, I wanted to ask you as a final point, you've covered the sort of the changing nature of the attacks, but in terms of the numbers of attacks, if we look at the EU Terrorism and Situation Report, there were fewer attacks in 2024 than in 2023. There was a decline from 120 down to 58. But then again, 2023 was actually an increase compared to previous years. So can we talk about an overall trend or not really?
I would argue that the overall trend is consistent, being that terrorism remains a major threat in Europe today. We see different motivations behind terrorist attacks. We've talked about jihadism, but we also see violent extremism, violent right-wing extremism, as well as violent left-wing extremism. We've seen sort of what we call nowadays nihilistic violent extremist attacks, meaning that they are not so much inspired by ideology, but very much drawn to ultra-violence, extreme violence online. So I would argue that the nature of the motivation has changed, but the amount, the number of attacks is fairly consistent overall if you look at the previous years. So that justifies a continued attention at EU level and, of course, at national levels for this.
So a lot more vigilance is needed. We'll have to stop there, but thank you so much for being my guest again, Bartian Vector, the EU's counterterrorism coordinator. And of course, we're very much covering the 10th anniversary of the Paris atrocities in our news programmes and not forgetting the many other victims of terrorism outside France as well. Thank you for watching.